thenewspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara, at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How you doing today?
Well, I am extremely excited because, and I hate to tease like this, but the first article, which we're going to get to in a moment, is probably the best article I've ever presented.
It's really important.
So, before
we get started, just so everyone can visualize you, because if they listen to you every week, he looks very nice. He's in a suit, a custom-made tie. He's looking really professional.
And the reason is this article demanded that.
Demanded that seriousness. Well, before we get to the articles, we have a guest in studio with us. We have a partner at Nasif Hicks & Harris, Tom Burke. Thanks so much for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Diane. Thanks, Neil.
You didn't get the memo that you have to wear a tie.
I have to own a tie.
Oh, that's a good one. That's why he lives in Santa Barbara, right?
Yeah, I got these from New York, and I kept them for 20 years. So this article is so unbelievable. It's from the Wall Street Journal. This month, a British chain of Mexican restaurants called Chilango launched a new burrito bond. By the way, this is not a joke. It's in the Wall Street Journal.
I know. It's funny because when you gave that article to me to read, I laughed because I was like, you've got to be kidding. There's a burrito bond. No.
Right. Now,
but it gets worse, actually.
No, it gets worse because these are a form of junk bonds. That is, it has a rate of 8% compared with 6.3%, the average in the junk bond market. So this is even worse than a junk bond. But unlike other junk bonds, if you buy the bond, you will get 2 free burritos weekly.
But isn't there a threshold?
Yes, there is a threshold. But if you invest £10,000, this is a British company, you will get free burritos every single week. So those people who think that we have an overheated stock market, we take a look at this and consider the fact that not only is this a very high risky investment, but people are being incentivized to do it because of free burritos.
And then the craziest thing is that you can actually log on to Chilango's website and buy the bond right there on the website.
Yes, but not, and you also can order a burrito.
Yes.
it's like a double benefit.
It's almost worse than the disaster bonds.
Yeah. So anyway, I only bought 100 shares.
But there isn't a Chilango's in town.
I know. So when I go to England next time. So the next article is by our favorite writer, Jason Zweig from the Wall Street Journal. And it is entitled, Sometimes It's Bonds for the Long Run. Now, the reason that title is interesting is that it's been generally accepted that over any long period of time, take 30 years, stocks have always outperformed bonds. And a study by a professor that Jason Zweig has read and highlights here has said that's not really true, that there have been many 30-year periods over the last, and he went back to 1793, where bonds outperform stocks. And the reason he thinks this is important is that you just can't take as a rule of thumb that over a long period of time, stocks will do better. There are many macroeconomic issues that could actually cause bonds to do better.
That said, if you're talking about the last 10 years, that would not be the case.
Short term.
Well, even though you look at what interest rates have been doing since the early 80s, they've just been coming down precipitously. So really, the time to buy that 30-year bond would have been early 80s to mid-80s.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but I think that one of the things that we're seeing now is the interest rates going up, and so it's going to be very tough to make a case that at least long-term bonds are a good investment over the next few years. I mean, there's generally an accepted view that interest rates are going to go up. Of course, that has an impact on the stocks, too, because as interest rates go up on bonds, the cap rate on stocks is affected, and therefore stocks need to earn more to be competitive with the bonds.
Absolutely, so just like that article that we talked about last week.
So you remember last week. I'm very impressed. So this article is so interesting.
You keep teeing me up for these ageism jokes that I'm not going to bite on today.
Well, but this will I think put in perspective how sometimes we see things differently. I handed you an article a few hours ago that was from the Wall Street Journal that we were going to discuss today, called Madison Avenue's Confronts Its Existential Challenges. And I underscored it, and you handed it back to me and said it was an interesting article because you were looking at the one on the other side that was buyback boom picks up where it left off. And I think we can talk about both of them. Let's take yours first.
Perfect.
We mentioned this a few weeks ago, and that is under SEC rules, a company cannot buy back its own stock during what's called the quiet period, a period before earnings comes out. And this goes back to 1934 when it was considered unfair to have a company that is about to release something that could affect the price of the stock, like earnings, and take advantage of the marketplace. So over the last quarter during this quiet period, which was right before earnings started coming out, companies stopped buying their own shares back. And we've talked about this before, that over the last 2 years, buybacks have been a substantial part of the buying of stocks. And with a tax cut, companies have been using it for the most part to buy back stock and to pay higher dividends. So one of the possible reasons why the market did so poorly over the period at the end of September, beginning of October, was because companies stopped buying their stock back. And the article here talks about now they're all buying it back. In fact, Warren Buffett, for the first time in 15 years, bought his own stock as well in the last few days. So that's your article. And you picked it, and you're staring at me like you're not interested.
No, that's not true. You're just doing such a great job at explaining it, Neil. Well, I didn't even have to pipe in.
Now, this is interesting. The article that I picked out, the other side of it, talks about how Madison Avenue companies like WPP, Omnicorp, which is the largest advertising agency in the world, are doing poorly now. And the reason they're doing poorly is that the world has changed from traditional advertising to online marketing. And we had a guest on a few
weeks. We've had two online marketing.
Right, and how online firms. Marketing is really different from advertising. And it's not only cheaper per eyeball, but it also can be more effective because it can be targeted.
Well, and they also have, you know, online has much better analytics than traditional media for marketing, such as print and, you know, billboards. It's not as easily defined and, you know, figured out what's working best. Online, you know, you have Google, you have Facebook, you have all the major internet companies that's where their bread and butter is. And they've really done a great job at refining and understanding what makes people buy and what doesn't.
And one of the things that made this article particularly interesting to me is the opportunity to talk about something I've talked about at least a half a dozen times, which is my favorite article from Harvard Business Review in 1960. It was called Marketing Myopia. And it talked about the most important decision a company can make, which is defining what they do. And the article basically says that the railroads ended up losing out because they defined themselves as railroads rather than transportation companies. Well, in this case, here we have the lesson not learned. Advertising companies define themselves as advertising companies as opposed to marketing. And there's a big difference between marketing and advertising. And the fact that these big companies didn't foresee what our two guests foresaw, that it wasn't just about traditional advertising, but to be successful in this internet environment, you needed to have a very robust expertise in marketing rather than advertising.
And I think what you see with the advertising agencies that have made it are the ones that were willing to pivot and take in the new mediums. And most of the big players in the advertising space didn't do that, which is why they're suffering.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
When I think of the soul of a child who has died, I picture a butterfly so beautiful and brave. I ask myself, is this a child I could have saved?
I'm Lynn Bozoff, president of the National Meningitis Association. For me and so many other parents, the butterfly symbolizes children we lost to meningitis. Their deaths could have been prevented through vaccination. Bacterial meningitis is a devastating disease that within hours can kill an otherwise healthy child or cause long-term complications like deafness, brain, kidney damage, or limb loss. Make sure your child is protected. Visit our website at nmaus.org to learn about the two vaccines that protect preteens and teens. Visit nmaus.org. Vaccination is the right thing to do.
Star Jasmine Music serves over 3,600 people per year. By providing a safe, supportive environment to explore music, you'll find a place that resonates within. We teach songwriting and how to play a variety of instruments. We have a Pro Tools state-of-the-art recording facility and provide opportunities for teens and young adults who show passion for music and demonstrate talent to record their work. This experience has been known to better one's self-esteem and often leads to development of skills in business and self-management. We have special programs for at-risk youth, as well as the mentally and physically challenged. When ready after a 10-week series, we record our students and give them a CD to show the fruit of their efforts. This experience leads to self-confidence. Visit us at www.starjasminemusic.org. Star Jasmine Music. Sharing music exploration through teaching and recording.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. So if you're just joining us, we have in studio with us today Tom Burke, who's a partner at Nasif Hicks Harris & Company, certified public accountants, and he is also a graduate of UCSB. So
sure am.
And you're a native as well, aren't you? You grew up here. No?
I'm about as close to a native as you can get without actually being born in Cottage. My parents moved here when I was about three. So real young. Was real lucky. Never actually left. Went to UCSB, got a career started here, met my wonderful wife. Now I've got twins that are just about to turn 7 in a couple of days, Tommy and Allie. I don't think they're listening to this, but hi, Tommy and Allie.
And great. So perfect. Now, what made you get into accounting?
Gosh, you know, I was at UCSB. I was a directionless, you know, 18-year-old, 19-year-old like most of us were, and I took an accounting class, and it occurred to me that I seemed to have something of an aptitude for it and figured I could probably get a job, and here I am 30 years later.
A partner of one of the most successful accounting firms in Santa Barbara. And also, you know, Nasif Hicks & Harris is known for being the kind of the tech-savvy CPA firm. You deal with a lot of the startup companies that come out of UCSB and also the other technology sector. Was that a deliberate decision, or did it just evolve to be that?
I think I would say that was a deliberate decision of one of my partners, Jeff Harris. He started his public accounting career up in the Bay Area, where obviously they, you know, were already
the birthplace of all things technology.
Yeah, the birthplace, Silicon Valley and everything. So when he moved here to Santa Barbara, he looked around, you know, he's told me this story 100 times, you know, he looked around and realized that nobody was really paying attention to the startups, and of course there wasn't nearly as many of them back in the, you know, in the late 80s, but they didn't really have a go-to CPA, so he really sort of, you know, pounded the pavement and became that guy, and that's really the genesis of how Nasif Hicks & Harris is involved in so many startup companies.
And really, you know, the rapid growth of your company is really exciting to watch. So tell us a little bit about the corporate culture that you have created over at NACIF Hicks & Harris and how you've been able to maintain this growth? Because you're up to now 50 people?
Something like 55, 56 people. It's kind of hard to keep track. I mean, two more just started the other day.
It's been fun to watch because you were a firm of, say, 10 people when you were on Laguna.
When we were on Garden Street, started there in 1987, I think we were 16 people. And then when we moved into our location over on Chapala in 2010, we were about 30 people. So we pretty much almost doubled in size since. You know, I think it's just the culture is one of entrepreneurship. One of the things that we try to give everybody an opportunity to take their career where they want it to go. We don't have titles. I guess legally we have titles. I mean, I'm an owner, and then everybody else might have letters behind their name like CPA, but it's just a very open-door culture where everybody's collaborative, and, you know, most people are really happy there. I know I consider myself really super lucky to have started there 21 years ago.
So, you know, as with each new tax, all the tax legislation that passes and the changes in the tax law and what have you, you know, this year has been one of the biggest changes in the tax law since I've been a professional.
Since 1987. It's the most upheaval since 87, which is the year I graduated from high school. So obviously I didn't have to deal with that. But, you know, that's what some of my, let's say, more experienced colleagues have told me.
So
and by the way, since I'm older than you, it was 86.
well, see, I told you.
Yeah, it was.
I was on the golf course.
You're on the golf team. So highlight what you think some of the changes in the tax law that will affect business owners in particular, and then we can talk about the personal side.
Mm-hmm.
What changes do you think will be both beneficial and, you know, perhaps detrimental on the business side of things?
On the business side of things, the thing about it is that most of the clients that we're working with here in, you know, Santa Barbara and the surrounding area are not in what's called a C corporation format. C corporation format is one where the corporation pays taxes on its earnings like Apple does, like Google does. For them, the drop in the tax rate from effectively 35% to 21% is just a boon, which is why, you know, what Neil was talking about a moment ago, you know, using a lot of that money to buy back corporate stock. But although we certainly do have C corporation clients, and I have some that have really seen, I mean, I can think of one right off the top of my head who they're going to pay $1 million less in income tax this year just because of the change in corporate tax rates. I mean,
wow.
Yeah.
That's significant.
But it's really more on the personal side because most of our clients, our business clients are in what are called S corporations or LLCs and, you know, in a type of partnership format where the earnings, whether it be positive or negative of the business, flow through on generally what's called a Schedule K-1 to their individual returns, or to the owner's returns, whoever the owner happens to be. So sort of moving on to what I think we're going to see on the personal side, I kind of make it akin to, we're going to put all this stuff into these returns, and they're going to look different. They're going to have all these different forms and all this different stuff, and we're going to pull the handle on the one-arm slot machine. And the result we're seeing over and over and over again is that taxes for people are going down a little bit, but not dramatically.
Interesting. So there's a lot of different forms that you now have to file, which are different.
That's what I think is going to be the case, although we haven't actually seen the forms because the IRS won't release them.
And this is the thing that's really...
That's not very helpful.
No, but this is the thing that just is, you know, so incredibly confusing is that, at least on the individual side, a lot of the regs aren't out. And no one really knows, for example, some of the pass-through rules for people who do get K-1s. Mm-hmm. And so here it is, November.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about planning. I don't even know if it's going to be ready to actually do your taxes. And so you've got incredible uncertainty. And uncertainty is not really good for long-term economic growth.
No, absolutely not. No, I've been telling people that all we really have this at this point is some bare bones and a whole lot of speculation, and we're really going to figure out what it all means when we actually start doing the tax returns, which means we're going to be figuring out what it means without the ability to, you know, to change it.
Are accountants in the same boat as TurboTax, or does TurboTax know something we don't know? I mean, how are they preparing their computer system for the upcoming year?
I don't know, but I suspect that they're probably trying to just build a skeleton so that at the last second they can scramble to, you know, drop the right, you know, peas into the right boxes.
So there's no way of getting ahead of this then?
Not really. I mean, we've done a lot of work over at Nasevix and Harris. You know, we put on a 2-day event down at the Fest Parker, which
is now called the Hilton, I think.
Which now is the Hilton or something like that, where we had, I think, a total, forgive me if I'm getting the number wrong, but over 2 days, something like 500 people came to it, you know, in a panel environment with a couple of our partners and a couple of, you know, respected attorneys in town. And we tried to, you know, give some general education, but, you know, like you said, without regulations, without, of course, any sort of court cases, without forms, what it's all really going to mean is sort of anybody's guess.
Which may be one of the reasons why in this current political campaign, the Republicans aren't really talking about taxes, at least to individuals, because there's nothing really to sell at this point. From the corporate side, there is, but from the individual side, people aren't able to really make a judgment as to what it does for them.
Well, I do want to get to that. I'm getting the signal that we've got.
Getting a signal.
Forget it. I'm not getting a signal?
I'm getting the signal.
There is one thing that to me, I think is probably going to be one of the most troubling things, especially to, well, across the country, but in a town like Santa Barbara where we've got how many thousands of charities. With the increase in the standard deduction, and I'll try to keep the math relatively straightforward, but the standard deduction goes up from, say, like $12,000 to $24,000. Well, what that means is that if you've got and your tax deduction on your itemized deduction is limited to $10,000 now. So let's say you've got $10,000 in tax deduction and you've got $10,000 in mortgage interest. Well, you're up to 20. So stopping there, you're going to take the standard deduction. But most of us, you know, maybe we've got kids in school or we go to church or we've got charities that we like to support. Well, in the example that I gave with $10,000 in tax deduction and $10,000 in mortgage interest, then the person goes off and they donate $3,000 to their charity. Well, they're still at the standard deduction. Now, wonderful, they had that charitable intent, and you need to have charitable intent, obviously, to make contributions, and we all applaud that. But people are going to realize very quickly when they do their tax returns, they're going to say, oh, and here's my charitable receipts, and their CPA is going to go, oh, don't worry, we don't need those anymore. They didn't save you anything.
So one of the things that apparently makes sense is to make, if you're going to take the, if you want to take the charitable deduction, is to take the next 2-3 years if you can afford it and put it into 1 year.
Yeah.
And that way you could, you know, justify filing on an itemized basis.
Yeah, it's something that accountants call bunching of your deductions, mm-hmm. where you basically try to get all your deductions for 2 years into 1 year. So maybe you'll donate in year one, year three, year five, that sort of thing.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Lori Leite from American Riviera Bank. Life is complicated. We can't help you with carpooling the kids to soccer practice or restoring all your files when your laptop crashes. But when it comes to banking, we can make your life much easier. With cutting-edge technology, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks only dream of, we deliver smart banking for smart people. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people. In Santa Barbara at Figaro and Anacapa and in Montecito's Upper Village.
It was a goal that I wanted to achieve from the very beginning.
I'm a 40-year-old man that walked in there to get his high school diploma. I wasn't sure if I could do it. It was very hard for me, but the teachers, the counselors, they help you.
One of the teachers was Miss Araceli. Miss Araceli, she gave me direction. Every single time I had a question, she'll put down whatever she's doing and she'll come over and she'll sit there with you until you get it.
At age 47, With the help of his teacher, Marco finished his high school diploma.
50% of getting your high school diploma is walking through those doors. The other 50% is doing the work. Getting your high school diploma, it is a life-changing experience. It really is. It catapults you to where you want to go.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Tom, before the break, we were talking about, you know, how that standard, the doubling of the standard deduction could, in fact, decrease the amount of charitable giving because, you know, people normally give and then they get a tax deduction for it. And if that dries up, are you anticipating that that will significantly hurt our charitable or our nonprofit community, which is thriving here in Santa Barbara?
I have to believe that because it's just human nature. I mean, people get to be close to the end of the year and they're thinking, okay, you know, I want to donate to the kids' school or to the church or to whatever the charity might be. And, you know, to some extent, it's human nature to rationalize it. Well, at least I'm saving taxes, too. So I get to help my favorite charity and I'm saving taxes. Well, you take one of those two things off the table and it's not going to make charity go down to zero, obviously, but it's going to have a negative impact. I mean, it just has to.
Right.
And none of us have a crystal ball, but I have to believe that. You know, that the big players out there in the world, the Red Cross and you name it, the ones with lots of political influence will.
Right, the national charities.
Yeah, will go knocking on the doors of their pet congressmen and senators and so forth and say, you know what, you just sort of submarined me on this one. And maybe they'll figure out a way to make some level of charity deductible regardless of whether you get an itemized deduction. I'm completely speculating, but I just suspect that Once this is figured out, there's going to be some gnashing of the teeth.
Well, and it also seems as if a lot of the, you know, as none of the or very few of the regulations have come out from the IRS yet, they did come out just last month with bringing back into the deductions for businesses, deductions on meals and entertainment. And so last year, because deductions, as far as I'm aware, deductions last year, you couldn't deduct entertainment and only half of.
You could deduct 50% of meals and entertainment. That's been the rule for as long as I can remember.
Okay. And so now with the new ruling, is that saying that meals and entertainment are 100% deductible or are they back to 50% as they were in the past?
The article that I read, so forgive me if I get this wrong, but I think I got it right, is that the deduction is 50% of the cost, and business meals are deductible, but entertainment isn't. So, for example, if I'm taking you out to lunch, Diane, and I pick up the tab, my business is going to get to deduct 50% of that because it's a business meal. If, on the other hand, I'm taking you to a skybox at the Lakers game, that's entertainment, and I believe that deduction is just off the table.
So have you seen that those entertainment expenses of the skyboxes and those types of things have really come down as it became no longer deductible for the corporations? Or have you, or has kind of that compelling desire to have a skybox or, you know, whatever the hot thing is really superseded and it happens?
I really haven't seen any change there.
No.
And I say this sort of tongue in cheek, but I like to think that most of my clients are smart enough to not spend their money on a skybox anyway.
I'm very careful now. When I'm at lunch with someone that I consider a business luncheon, I try not to be too personable because I don't want them to feel they've been entertained.
Is that difficult for you?
It's very difficult for Neil not to be personable.
And also the other, but the advantage is I don't have any clients, so it's a very
easy.
Or friends. Well, but you know, the thing about being retired is that I can leave the American Express or the MasterCard slips on the table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to something relevant. So with the new tax act, it's basically brought the deduction for medical expenses back down to 7.5% of adjusted gross income. So do you think that that's going to have a positive effect on keeping medical prices down? Because that's something that's been a big issue with the Affordable Care Act and insurance. And each year, you know, as a small business owner myself, our insurance rates continue to go up to the tune of, you know, somewhere 10 to 15%
yeah.
a year. And so do you think that that will help that, you know, the medical prices stabilize, or do you think it will just have?
In a word, no.
No.
I don't think it'll have any effect on it whatsoever. I don't know what the black magic is that they use to figure out how much your insurance should cost or medical, but that your tax deduction in the unfortunate, you know, circumstance that you're actually incurring enough medical expenses to qualify, that it saves that person a little bit in taxes more than it did before, great, but I don't think it's going to have any effect.
Gotcha. So now switching gears back to the property taxes, because I've gotten a lot of questions from my clients about, so you have the mortgage interest. I feel like the mortgage interest deduction and the property tax deduction are kind of getting lumped into one. Could you explain a little bit more about what the property tax deduction really is versus what the mortgage interest deduction?
Okay. Yeah, they are completely different. On the tax side, historically, you've been able to take an itemized deduction for real estate taxes, state income taxes paid to California, DMV. You're even able to deduct your foreign income taxes if you don't want to take the foreign income tax credit. So for people here in, you know, in Santa Barbara, for example, who are, you know, who have $1 million home, they're going to pay $10,000, give or take, in real estate taxes. Well, they're also paying state income taxes to California, and they're paying for DMV. The new law sets a limit on all of those type of tax deductions at $10,000.
Combining them all together.
Correct. They're all in the same bucket, and that bucket can't add up to more than $10,000.
Wow. So people who own a home in Santa Barbara will get to that number pretty quickly.
And actually, but let me be clear. These are real estate taxes paid on your principal residence or a vacation home, something personal. If you've got a rental property, then there is no $10,000 limitation.
Okay.
So,
but basically, you know, if you think about what real estate taxes are, you know, that's the check that you're paying to Harry Hagan.
Mm-hmm.
So if your home is pretty much $800,000 or above of what you purchased it, you get to $10,000 really quick.
You're already there.
Yeah.
And that's before you've even paid any taxes to the state of California.
For your income
earned. For your income taxes. Correct.
So all of that coupled together, that will really affect those of us who live in high real estate areas such as Santa Barbara or California in general, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, that sounds really bad, and it will negatively impact some people. But the other wrinkle is that even though there was no limit on the deductibility of all those various types of taxes in the past, they were deductible for what's called regular tax, but not deductible for alternative minimum tax, AMT for short. So for those of us who were already subject to the AMT, to a great extent, all the new law has done is taken away a deduction that wasn't saving us any taxes anyway.
Gotcha.
And the AMT revisions are still not clear for individuals as to, you know, what the impact is.
Right.
Which is really unbelievable if you think about it.
Right, because, you know, taxes are going to have to be filed and you know,
couple
5 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I laugh. It's not going to be a
fail. You're laughing at my pain.
Yeah. Hey, sorry about that. I didn't mean that. But, right. So, okay. So then you also now we have the income tax. Now, what about the mortgage deduction? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay. The mortgage interest deduction used to be limited to a grand total of $1.1 million of your mortgage. So
you would have to have a loan of $1.1 million, but if you had a loan of $1.2 million, only the interest on $1.1 million would be deductible, right?
That's correct. So I think if I were, it's either 700,000 or 750,000. 750, thanks. I don't keep all those every single number stuck in my head. I'm trying more to keep the theory and practice in my head. But yeah, so it's down to 750,000 from 1.1 million. Not for grandfathered mortgages though, just for new ones.
So you will have had to purchase a home in 2018.
I think it's actually any new loan after like December 22nd of 2017 or something. I think the day of the enactment.
So, gotcha.
But effectively, a new loan right now is going to be limited to 750
for the mortgage deduction.
Right. But I also believe, and again, here's where I think not everything is absolutely clear, although I think I'm right on this, that let's say you've got a $900,000 mortgage right now and you want to go out and do a refi into just a brand new $900,000 mortgage. That, I believe, is still grandfathered.
Oh, interesting, because you're not purchasing a new property or taking more money out of the original loan.
Right. But let's say you've got a $700,000 mortgage right now and you want to do a refi and take out $900,000, get some extra money. That's not going to be grandfathered, the excess, that is.
Gotcha.
So this is pretty depressing, isn't it? I think we need to take a break. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
When I saw a woman unconscious in her chair, not breathing, I felt frozen in time. As a longtime waitress in Santa Barbara, I have seen a lot, but this was frightening. Fortunately, I had just gotten my CPR recertification from our local Red Cross chapter. I was able to assess the situation, lay the woman on the floor, and start chest compressions and rescue breathing. Suddenly, I heard a gurgling in the woman's throat, and someone said, "She's breathing." I continued using the CPR skills I'd learned at the Red Cross until the paramedics arrived. Some people call me a hero. I don't think of myself that way. I'm just an ordinary person who knew what to do in an emergency situation. Thanks to my local Red Cross training, I helped save a life.
The American Red Cross, Santa Barbara County Chapter, is here to prepare you for emergencies. Call 805-687-1331. Or go to sbredcross.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about.
So before the break, we were talking about, you know, the mortgage interest deduction and, you know, the changes of bringing down the deductibility of the loan from $1.1 to $750,000.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that is going to bring home prices or listing prices down in our area, especially where jumbo loans of mortgages of 1.1 are very common? Or do you think it won't have an effect, the deductibility?
I don't really think that the change in the law is going to have any significant impact on home prices around here. I mean, maybe some tiny incremental effect. I mean, I think we're already seeing softening in the market, but I don't think it's because of taxes.
Right. Given all the natural disasters that our community has endured this last year, I think has added to that softening in the real estate market.
Yeah. I mean, The recipe for the softening has got 100 ingredients in it, and that might be one of them, but you know, a pretty you know, a pinch of salt.
Right. So, you know, with this new tax, the Tax Act of 2018, when it was passed, it was always touted as a simplification of our already complex tax code. Now, would you say that they've accomplished that by making it less complicated? You know, I think the slogan was it was going to be, you know, you'll be able to file on a postcard. Based upon our conversation so far, I'm going to go with no on my guess, but let's hear from you, the expert.
Well, there's a reason why we call every new tax act, especially this one, the Accountants Full Employment Act.
Right, because it's complicated.
Because it's complicated. Did they make anything simpler? I suppose for the family that, because of the standard deduction going from 12 to 24 approximately, doesn't have to file a Schedule A for itemized deductions. Did they just make that person's return one page simpler? Sure. Did they make it, but across the board, did anything get simpler? Absolutely not. It never does.
I was speaking to an accountant just last week who said she went to the seminar on this new tax act, and basically the seminar told all the attendees that each return is going to take an extra 2 hours per return to like get all this new information in. Does that sound accurate to you?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah? I mean, because they've basically taken the rules and thrown them all up in the air, and what's come down is all completely different. So, is it more or less complicated? I don't know. Probably about the same. Maybe even more complicated. But if we have to learn a whole bunch of new stuff, which we do, sure, it's going to take longer.
So everyone should expect a little bit more expensive accounting bill this year. You should budget that in.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a great idea.
Which, speaking of deductions, has that gone away as well?
Yes.
So also taken away in the Tax Deductibility Act would be any professional service fees that used to be deducted?
I believe that's the case. Yeah, I'd have to confirm. I mean, the main thing that you would see down at the bottom of Schedule A where those deductions would show up was, you know, like your advisor fees paid to Diane.
Right.
And that's no longer deductible. And I believe that whole section went away. But again, to be very honest, we don't have the forms and I don't purport to have everything just off the tip of my tongue.
Right. You don't? You're not like a vault upstairs?
No.
You don't expect that, Tom. We know, you know, you and your firm are known for doing such great in-depth research on various tax bills, tax nuances of everyone's individual personal information. So what happened with the elimination of the personal exemption for dependents? Are you familiar with that?
And that was another thing that wasn't deductible for AMT anyway. So a large percentage of our clients, they've taken away something that wasn't saving them anything anyway.
Right. Yeah. So AMT, for our listeners who are unaware, is a parallel tax that happens.
Right.
So you have the regular tax?
Everybody just calls it regular tax. Yeah. So if we were sitting all here together in a room, the way I try to explain it to people is that people think of the alternative minimum tax, AMT, as like a penalty, because that's actually kind of what it looks like on page 2 of your tax return, the page you're actually signing. You see all your income, then you see your deductions, it comes to taxable income, a tax number is calculated, and then boom, you see an addition to that tax for AMT. But what's really going on is that you've just got two separate taxing structures in side-by-side columns where you've got your income and minus your deductions equals your taxable income, either be regular or AMT, times a rate. And the differences between those columns is you have different tax rates, and also certain deductions are deductible for regular but not for AMT, or vice versa. Certain items of income are income for regular and not income for AMT, or vice versa. Like for people that have incentive stock options and they exercise it, that's an AMT adjustment. So really what's going on is not so much of a penalty, but just like two tax returns getting calculated at the same time, you get to the bottom line and guess which number you pay.
The bigger one.
The bigger one.
But one of the problems has always been, first of all, those rules were never indexed. So more and more people ended up being
right
in the AMT. But the other problem was there really was no intuitive way for someone who is not an accounting /computer to sort of gauge what they should be doing during the year to avoid AMT. Because
right,
it's so complicated that you just had to, you know, at the end of the day, you say to your accountant, well, how did I do with the AMT? It was almost like a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way for you to sit there with a yellow pad and kind of rough out the numbers, which, you know, is really not a great way to have a tax system.
No, not at all. No, it was year-end planning that, you know, we've always done. And, you know, for CPAs, it's AMT, year-end planning, is kind of tax planning 101. It's not the most complicated thing that we do, but it's not intuitive at all, at least not unless you've, you know, done it for 20 years and 10,000 times over.
I have to say that's one thing that I think really sets Nasefix and Harris apart from the rest of the accounting firms is the fact that you do a lot of tax planning year end. And so given that, given you usually, you know, sit down with your clients mm-hmm. and try to figure out where you're at before the year ends, mm-hmm. because once the year ends, there's no changing it.
Right.
How are you doing that this year with with kind of this unknown?
A little bit by the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
But frankly, it's made getting started on year-end planning a little bit more of an urgent matter. The extended due date for individual returns is October 15th. So our fiscal year sort of for doing tax returns sort of goes from, you know, ends on October 15th. And then we've got about 2.5 months to try to get done before the end of the year, whatever levers we want to pull.
Right.
Well, you know, because sometimes tax planning, getting people's tax returns done, not for us, but for our clients, is, you know, one step below cleaning out the cat box.
or a few steps below.
Yeah, or a few steps below. You know, this year with all the changes, and, you know, it's obviously garnered some interest because it's going to affect people's bottom line. We have gotten off to an earlier start this year with year-end planning. I mean, it's only November, what is it,
the 5th?
And we're pretty much up and running, where lots of times we're kind of pulling teeth and not getting into the meat of it until after Thanksgiving.
Do you think because of the uncertainty for those people who are individual estimators or whatever that's called,
mm-hmm.
They're going to, if they weren't tax-proofed mm-hmm. in terms of their withholding, are they going to still be penalized if they end up being underpaid mm-hmm. with their estimates?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those rules didn't change. You've got to pay in either 100 or 110% of your prior year number, and it's 110% if your adjusted gross income was over, I think, $150,000. If you do that, that's what we call the safe harbor. You can owe a gazillion dollars come April 15th, but if you pay in based on the prior year, you've got safe harbor, you're covered. The other way is you pay in based on 90% of the current year, which to some extent we need a crystal ball to figure out.
Now, how does the IRS work? It's as long as it's in that tax year, correct? Meaning, if I didn't do a quarterly payment in March, or if I didn't do my June quarterly payment, mm-hmm. let's say, but then in December I sent in a bunch of money to get me to that 90% of my tax rate of this year,
mm-hmm.
would I be penalized?
Yeah, you've effectively borrowed from the IRS from June until, in your example, December, when you got caught up, and the rate, I don't remember off the top of my head exactly what it's at right now, but it's about 4.5% or 5%, something like that. So it's not a brutal effective interest rate. It is a quote-unquote penalty, but it's calculated like interest.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or Create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, your clear voice for science, nature, and people in a complex world.
Our radio program covers a wide array of topics, including astronomy, oceanography, earth science, the environment, and sustainability. You can hear Earth and Sky daily in Santa Barbara, right here on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we're getting some clarification on the new tax act from Tom Burke, partner at Nasif Hicks & Harris. And so, Tom, let's talk a little bit about your firm and who your ideal client is. So if we have listeners out there thinking, gosh, I have no idea what I'm going to do, and I don't have a CPA, or something happened, and my CPA is no longer, I don't have access to that person. Who would be the right person or the right individual or situation to come see Nasif Hicks & Harris?
Probably our sweet spot client is small to medium sized businesses and their owners. And the reason I say and their owners is because, if somebody comes to me and they say, hey, I just want you to prepare my corporate return, but I'll have some other guy do the individual return. Well, then to a great extent, I'm operating in a vacuum. And I really cannot help that person nearly as well as I can help them with regard to their taxes, just for one, economic example, that I can look at everything from 30,000 feet and see how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together, so that we can help them make, good decisions on a daily, annually, lifetime basis, so they can accomplish what they're trying to accomplish. So is our ideal client somebody that's in real estate, or somebody that is in high tech, or somebody that is an attorney or a doctor? It really isn't any of those, because it's really all of those. I've never really felt like I had to take off one hat and put on a different hat to help my doctor client compared to my client that has a large real estate portfolio. It's really, good economic decisions are good economic decisions.
Right, of course. And so if someone's listening out there and thinks, gosh, I want to get in touch with Tom, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Probably just go to our website and check us out, because all of the contact information is there. And the website is nhhco.com. That's Nancy House House Cat Oscar .com.
Perfect.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And now that you've made it so cloudy, we're all going to have to go talk to our accountants. By the way, who does your taxes?
I do mine, and every year my wife asks me, how much did we pay? And when I tell her the number, she says, you're not doing a good job. We need a better CPA.
Well, thank you, Tom Burke.
Thanks, Tom.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. You've been listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week.
It's